Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Whether we're working in or out of the office, every day our teams are reimagining what it means to connect and produce incredible results. Atlassian's remote-friendly software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help your team work effectively by connecting your entire organization in one shared digital workspace. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So, work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genai to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And Kara, I'm at the age now where if I don't sleep with the right pillow, I feel as if I've been pushed out of an 11th floor window.
Have you thought about the MyPillow from Mike?
By the way, the reason I bring that up is that is the incredible Simon Holland, who's this funny dad jokes guy on Twitter. And I'm constantly stealing his humor. And I feel like on a regular basis, I need
Why are you doing that? Why are you stealing other people's dad humor? You've got so much of your own.
I want to be loved and I want to make coin and drive a Bentley. And I don't know.
Do you really want to drive a Bentley? You're in Los Angeles right now. Is that correct, Scott?
I'm in LA.
How's it going? How is LA? You know, they have new mask guidelines back because of the Delta variant. Did you see any indications of that?
The service staff was wearing masks, but it felt pretty. I mean, I love LA. I don't know how much time you spend here. I grew up here, but I don't spend a lot of time here. But whenever I come in, I'm you know, your plane comes over Malibu and the Pacific Ocean, and then I go to In-N-Out Burger, and then I see the Bougainvillea up and down San Vicente, where I used to run. Around the perimeter at UCLA, and I'm like, why did I leave LA again?
Well, California is burning, but I love California. I think people really like to dump on California, but I think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. It is really good. Well, good. You enjoying yourself there? I miss California. I haven't been back in almost 2 years, which I've got to get back. I've got to get back very soon. Very soon, because we'll be having code
Come
there.
Come on out. We'll go to Mr. Chow's. I went to Mr. Chow's.
We are going to spend some time there in September, you and I, and we're going to have a very good time. I have so many surprises for you for code. Scott Galloway surprises. It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. Right. But let's get to the news right now. Let's get to the news. So Robinhood is paying $70 million fine to settle allegations of, quote, widespread and significant harm to customers over the past few years. It's the highest fine by FINRA, which is the agency that oversees this. But I feel like it's a slap on the wrist. Scott, what do you think?
Well, so just let's pull some keywords from the decision. They use the word reckless. They use the word negligent.
Yeah.
And damage across millions of customers. And this is where they got it wrong. Their customer is the brokerage buying their order flow.
Yeah.
The people who are who sign up for Robinhood are its product and its mineral or its input, like, you know, swine to a slaughter. And that is not who they are focused on. And they were fined. They brought up really two things. One, they failed to communicate with people or in any way screen them for their compatibility or eligibility or if they were appropriate investors for options. I mean, think about this. When you buy a stock, you are buying an asset. It's something that has rights to cash flows and ownership in a corporation. It is an asset. An option is essentially a synthetic that was originally invented to try and hedge people's assets such that if the stock went down, you weren't hurt as badly. Now, if you and I just took a dart and threw it at the S&P 500 and bought one of those stocks, there's less than a 1% chance that'll go to zero. When you buy options, there's an 80% chance within 12 months that instrument will go to zero. I mean, these are weapons of mass destruction. And I don't mean to infantilize new investors, but the markets have decided that it makes sense for financial services institutions to do some preliminary checking on the eligibility and appropriateness of people to trade options. And the way you become appropriate or the way you get qualified or eligible on Robinhood is instead of saying my risk tolerance is low, you just click medium and you can be trading options 3 minutes later.
Indeed, you can.
And they decided they weren't providing disclosures, communications, and then they said they had not made the requisite investments in technology such that when trading days scaled, people were prohibited from, in this instance, from buying certain stocks. Mm-hmm. So what do you have? You have a company that doesn't make disclosures, a company that obviously doesn't give a good goddamn about the financial well-being of its customer set. And you have a company that hasn't made the investments in technology such that in key moments in the market, when you could be vulnerable, you can't trade. And here's the problem again. And you highlighted it. You teed me up here. This was perfect, except it was missing a zero. Robinhood is about to go public at a market capitalization, they say, of around $40 billion. So they'll probably raise $3 or $4 billion.
Right.
So this would be like if on this podcast, you and I could spread misinformation that resulted in financial harm and economic damage to people's livelihoods, but it massively scaled our ability to attract advertisers and say you and I just had no morals and didn't care about the damage to our listeners. And then the FTC or the FCC, better yet, the regulatory body for communications came back and said, Karen Scott, you have damaged your consumers, so we're going to fine you, and this would be the exact equivalent. We're going to fine you. We're going to fine you $4.
Yeah, yeah.
Would that discourage us from doing this?
No, this is the thing. They raised $3.4 billion in February. They announced that already, and they already, this is including the $1 billion in funding announced previously. And, you know, their investors are all sort of the typical ones of Silicon Valley, Iconic Capital, Andreessen Horowitz, Sequoia, Index Ventures, NEA. And so I think, you know, this reminds me, I'm working on my book about, you know, growing up in Silicon Valley and covering it. And one of the things that reminds me of, although the damage is so much less, was when AOL decided to go all you can eat and then didn't provide the technology and was charging people. If you remember, and then they had that outage. If you recall, they had that 20-some hour outage, which was people were just relying on it to talk to each other in this way. But they completely, you know, dropped the ball in terms of having they opened their store and then didn't have the requisite things in place to be able to deliver the goods they promised. And in this case, the kind of responsibilities they have, and they're pretending it's a game. And then anybody who doesn't say, you know, who doesn't agree with them and thinks they should be more careful is a bummer. Or, you know, doesn't understand the democracy of investors and this and that. It's just, it's literally like, you remember on Saturday Night Live, they had Bag O' Glass? Do you remember Dan Aykroyd years ago?
I don't remember that.
They had all these Ronco games, and one of them was called Bag O' Glass. That's what it reminds me of. It's like, go ahead, do this if you want to.
What's the message it sends to the market? So I work with Goldman Sachs, and if I write options or I write calls, someone will call me and walk me through a variety of scenarios. And sometimes they won't let me do it. Sometimes they say, we've decided it's too risky for us and it's too risky for you. And they want to know, they want to make sure that they aren't subjecting their own shareholders to a lot of risk, and B, they want to make sure that I'm thoughtful about the risks I take.
Yeah.
They look at this decision, as does Charles Schwab, as does Interactive Brokers, as does Merrill Lynch, and go, we're the fucking idiots.
Right.
Don't show any regard for your consumers.
$70 million was a green light. We're going to have to move on this, but it's a green light. It's just not enough money, and it's not going to stop them. They are not at all chastened by anything. And so, you know, they don't care.
This is saying right on, keep going. And they missed it by a zero. If they'd find them $700 million, that would have slowed down the IPO. And would have sent a message to the entire financial services industries that those of you who actually give a good goddamn about the financial well-being of your consumers, right on. And for those of you that don't, we're going to hurt you. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to regulate you, not embolden you.
We're going to move on, but it's a theme. This horror. This do whatever you want. And of course, you know, earlier this week in horrible men news, Bill Cosby is being released from prison because his Fifth Amendment right was over. He didn't have his Fifth Amendment right, and so he was released from prison, even though he admitted to doing the things that he was convicted for the second time. It was a technicality because the prosecutor, who happened to actually work for Donald Trump during the most recent impeachment hearings, let him off, essentially gave him carte blanche, very similar to what one of the prosecutors did to Jeffrey Epstein and stuff like that. So, you know, it emboldens people when this happens, when regulatory scrutiny is not done correctly, or prosecutors don't do their job in the right way. Technicalities get people off. It's really quite disturbing on many levels.
Yeah, it strikes me that Britney Spears needs to be a ward of the state, but we let Bill Cosby out.
Yeah, I know. Britney needs
government supervision.
She's crazy. We're gonna let Bill Cosby out. Ridiculous. What a menace he is. What a menace to society. And correctly, his lawyers did a very good job, and they got him off on a technicality. It's not a technicality. It's a constitutional.
Well, my understanding I'm not defending Bill Cosby. I'm defending the law here.
Yeah,
is that the statements that got him put in prison?
Yep.
Were offered under the offer of immunity. So yep. the courts, as I understand it correctly, went back and said whether he's guilty or not. The evidence that was used to put him in prison was extracted under the notion of immunity.
Yes. No, it's like bad searches. It's bad searches, even if people are guilty. And by the way, if he did it once, he did it. Lots and lots of times. So we'll see if this is over for him yet. Just as if Harvey Weinstein's going to California to face the music there. We'll see what happens. It was disappointing, but we agree completely. But let's get to the big story, speaking of which. Earlier this week, a federal judge threw out antitrust cases brought on by the Federal Trade Commission and 40 states' attorneys general against Facebook. The judge said the case hinges on deals made by Facebook in 2012 and 2014. This is Instagram and WhatsApp. And the lawsuit was brought too late. As a reminder, the lawsuit asserted Facebook had social media monopoly power with their acquisitions of WhatsApp and Instagram. The judge said the FTC could try again within 30 days, but they'd have to bring more detail. Facebook stock was not surprisingly up 4.2%. The company passed the $1 trillion market cap for the first time. It had been hovering below that for a very long time. Meanwhile, Facebook announced its Substack competitor. It allows writers to publish free and paid newsletters that can be posted on the web, sent to subscribers' inboxes, shared across Facebook. It's not taking a fee at sign up. It's trying to put things like Substack out of business. And for context, Substack charges 10% cut of the subscription. So it's pulling a little Microsoft here. Celebrities celebrity writers like Malcolm Gladwell and Tan France, Mitch Albom are among the first people to sign up for the service. I don't think they signed up and they were paid in some way, the way Substack does it. So let's take this apart. First of all, Scott, you had talked about judges being the issues in these antitrust cases and other cases against tech.
Yeah, the ruling was that it took you too long. Like it highlights the need that with the current system, with current antitrust and current interpretation by this current set of judges, we need new laws.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Antitrust law is loosely based on consumer harm, and the primary metric for evaluating consumer harm is whether prices rose. And we're talking about free products. So we're trying to regulate, I don't know what the term is, coal in a solar, an alternative energy universe. We just don't, our laws need updating. Mm-hmm. And I think Lena Khan's first job is, our big test is she's going to have to rewrite the complaint. Mm-hmm. But it just shows current antitrust law, current bench or current judges, we're not going to get there. And it is, there's just no getting around it. It's a setback. It's clear that this is going to be a multi-year thing. Although the thing I found encouraging was that the two people who came out and said clearly, we need new laws. We're Representative Buck, a Democrat out of Colorado, and Josh Hawley, a Republican senator.
Yeah. Along with Democrats. Yeah, yeah. So they know they need to rewrite these antitrust laws.
But more importantly, people from both sides agree that the laws need to be written. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to make progress. It's just going to be a slow grind here. They're going to have to update the antitrust laws, which they have done before. But as it currently stands, it's going to be, and it's happening all over. Stuff's getting thrown out in Europe. There just isn't. These companies aren't set up to be evaluated in an appropriate way. They should be evaluated. We should go back to Brandeis where they're evaluated on market power, not on consumer harm, so to speak. Yeah.
It'll be tough. Here? Legally, this is going to be very tough for all these companies. And so I think regulators, and they took too long and they waited too long. And you should see the list. There's a tweet about the list of how many openings all these companies have in public policy, like hundreds of people, where it's just going to be used to impact both regulators and judges. And these people are loaded for bear. These tech companies are loaded for bear, and they're going to use their money and power and influence to do this. So the legislators really do need to move quickly and to get some of these laws passed. Eventually, I suspect some of them are going to go to the Supreme Court. Some of them are going all over the place. But it's going to be a really interesting couple of years if government can stay together and do something about this. But again, not a surprise. And Scott, you did, you know, you did talk about this, and I don't think this is going to be the first time that judges are going to overturn things that regulators are attempting to do. What do you think about Facebook becoming a $1 trillion valued company?
I think it's the fifth now. I mean, these companies, they're just such incredible business models, and they've demonstrated their ability to kind of at this point overrun government. And even if government is able to push back, it's going to be years, not months.
Yeah.
And so, and look, there's a great investment strategy is to invest in unregulated monopolies.
Yeah.
It's just a good, in terms of risk.
Yes, it is.
In terms of, it's just, what do I do with my money? Well, I don't know. I'll just find a monopoly that's unregulated.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good investment strategy, and it continues to be. I don't see anything slowing these companies down right now.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Time. Yeah. That's what I say. So what about Bulletin? Are you going to sign up for Bulletin? No, they didn't call us.
Can we role play? Are we at a point in our relationship where
yes,
we can role
play?
I want you to be Facebook and call me. I have a quarter of a million strong newsletter called No Mercy, No Malice.
Okay.
All right. I want you to call me and say, hi, I'm from Facebook. Scott, we'd like you to be on Bulletin.
Okay. Hi, Scott. This is Facebook. We'd love you to be on Bulletin.
Let me think. Fuck you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue now.
Scott, we're going to give you $1 million guarantee to do so.
Go on.
Exactly. That's exactly. They're trying to put these. Speaking of Congress, pay attention. They're doing what Microsoft did with Explorer and Netscape. It's the same thing. The low price of zero to use.
Just
our
a shocker, Kara. They didn't call me.
They didn't call me either. They did not call me either. They did not call me either.
What do you think of this? I have mixed emotions on this.
I would never in a million years use their tools to do this. There's so many other choices, first of all, which thank goodness, until they put them out of business. They have no interest in media. They have no interest in media at all. Like, this is a company that I think hates media in a way that I've never seen a tech company do. It misjudges it, is wrong about it, doesn't, you know, just all only opportunity. And then they lecture you about media. And it's just, I would not do it in a million years. That's me being, you know, that's me on my moral high ground thing. The other thing is, I would rather
threatens newspapers with libel lawsuits if they continue
exactly.
to report on
there. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, I have issues with Substack, but I still find them fascinating. I think they hit a really interesting part of the market. I think they are going to struggle, just like Clubhouse is going to struggle. It's the same thing with these things. They can hopefully get bought. I guess that's what they would do. You know, you have Twitter doing review. I don't see them lighting the world on fire. You know, you're probably going to see others, the big companies, get into this, right? You could see Google doing something. They have. Google had Blogger for a while. They've all dipped in here, and then they've dipped right out, essentially. This sort of happened a couple of years ago around blogging platforms. And we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I think they're going to try to featureize it. And, you know, I suppose if you want to do a Substack for your local lacrosse team or, you know, Cub Scouts, I don't know, I guess, fine, whatever. I was sort of fascinated with who they tried to get to go over there. And I'm curious how much money. I would love for someone like Casey Newton to find out how much money they paid Malcolm Gladwell or some of the others to be on there. But, you know, whatever. I don't think celebrity writers are going to be the thing that pushes this thing over the top, though.
There's a couple of interesting trends here. The first is there is something around the creator economy where
the traditional
gatekeepers, whether it's, I'm meeting with my agent today, they're traditional, they're gatekeepers, Hollywood executives, some young guy with cool glasses gets to decide what movies go into production or don't. And there is a reshaping of the supply chain where these platforms are letting creators, if you will, go direct to consumer, and this notion of dispersion where you get more margin to the initial creator, whether it's self-publishing or putting your videos on TikTok, and then the end user gets the product at a lower cost and with less friction. That is an enormous trend, and this is part of that. And that's a good thing. It'll probably take the same path that Facebook always takes. Facebook said to brands, build your brand page, and you will own your customer set, and you'll be able to communicate directly with them. And they're saying to great writers like Malcolm Gladwell, come on our new product, we'll promote it, we'll sign up a bunch of people for your newsletter. And that creates a healthier ecosystem, more reason to stay on the platform. But over time, the bottom line is you can't trust Facebook. Facebook at any moment might say, you know what, we've decided you need to give us X percent, or we're going to monetize this by doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And you either love it or leave it. And if you leave it, you leave the entire ecosystem because we're the dominant player. I do think it probably puts the other guys out of business. I think the other guys...
I don't know if they'll become the dominant player. They've been in this space before. They've been in the media space before. They've had so many rounds with publishers in so many different ways. I can't even... I was, as I'm researching this book, I can't even remember some of the things they did, right? They had Randy Zuckerberg, Mark's sister, in a closet at Facebook making like videos with famous people who showed up. I mean, they've done 20 different things, including all these deals with the New York Times and other places. You remember, and they all tend to just go nowhere. And so I think this is just like their dating service.
Okay, let's use your tenant, Casey Newton. Very talented guy. He has a Substack, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Facebook comes to him and says, all right, you're paying 20% to Substack. Pay zero to us and we'll double or we'll increase your user base by 50% because we have this fire hose of 2 billion active users that we can, if we decide we think you're important, we can spray at you. And Casey's going to wring his hands for a minute and go, well, I hate Facebook. They're awful. And Carol will be disappointed in me. But Facebook has the ability, because of their quote-unquote monopoly power, to put these small innovative companies out of business. So
I don't agree. I don't think they do. I think they have much less power here. I don't think they do. Yeah. I've seen them do it before. Casey stays at Substack. I don't know about that. I think he'll do it on his own. That's what I think. I think at some point when he gets to the level where he's giving them too much money, he either will strike a deal with them to give them less money, or he will just do what Ben Thompson does and put together tools on his own. And that's going to get more easy. There's no reason to go to Facebook. It's like getting a website from, remember all those website companies that would put up a website for you in seconds, whatever. There were a million of them. And then there was not MySpace, but there were versions of that. I can't remember their names. There were so many that were going to do this. I just don't think all these creator economy companies, including, I was talking to someone was talking about sports stars. They don't want to like go with these big companies anymore. They want to do things on their own, and they know what they're valued at. You know what I mean? And more they'll have tools to do so and reach customers directly, reach fans directly. And so I don't know. I don't think you need Facebook in this case. I think you can find, I don't think they own the media space in quite the way you think they do. That's my feeling. I think Casey will probably leave Substack, but I don't. This is me just saying this off the top of my head. But I think the stink of Facebook. No, he wouldn't do it. Now a lot of real. It's the stink of Facebook. I don't know how else to put it.
It's interesting because the stank.
I interviewed Ron Klain, who's the Biden's chief of staff here today, and one of the things he did tell me when he said something that was off his talking points was I asked him about social media and vaccinations. We were talking about the Delta variant, and this is he said directly. I've told Mark Zuckerberg directly that we ask unvaccinated people why aren't you vaccinated, and they tell us things that are just completely wrong, and we ask them where they heard that, the most common answer is always Facebook. This is the cheapest Biden.
I don't know. I still think
the stink of Facebook.
I still think they just have such, they have such command, they have such custody of so many people. They can, make or break, and I think almost any content, idea, conspiracy theory if their algorithm decides to.
I don't think so. I think Amazon and commerce much more so. I think we'll disagree on this. I've seen them try this before and they suck at it because they just suck at it. They suck at media and they will always suck at media and they don't care. It's the same. Given
the courts recent setbacks around antitrust, maybe this emboldens them to just go buy these companies.
Maybe so.
I mean,
if
there wasn't antitrust scrutiny right now, wouldn't they have already bought? Wouldn't one of them already have bought Substack?
No, because they think this is a lot of trouble. Media is a lot of trouble for them. They don't want to get near this. They should stay away and make their little money, sucking up people's personal data and vomiting it back up to them. I don't know why they would want to move into this space that much. It's because they can't stand being insulted, just the way Mark Andreessen's going to make Future. Like, go for it. Go for it.
So you think they're trying to influence me? I don't see it as quite as malicious as that.
I don't think it's malicious. I just think it's a big, it's not much money for a lot of noise. I don't know. I just wouldn't get into the media space. Media space takes a lot. You got to have a certain amount. And there's all these really cool ways.
I think you just described our show. I think that's the tagline for our show. Not much money. A lot of noise for not a lot of money. We're like Sizzler. We're like the ad for Sizzler. Right, I don't have a lot of money.
We will be watching. But just so you know, Facebook, Scott Galloway's, it can be sold for $1 million. I just proved it to you.
A lot less than that.
Shh. All right. What is your number? Okay, 500,000. I'm Facebook. 500,000.
I don't know. Do I get to hang out? I don't know. Will they invite me to cool parties?
No, they do not have cool parties. Trust me, I've been to them. They're not cool. they're uncool.
I've finally come. Awkward. I've come. Like, I came to grips with the fact a long time ago that I'm a whore, and now I'm finally down with the fact that I'm a cheap whore.
Yes, you are indeed. Anyway, again, once again.
I'm the information economy sex wooka.
Yeah, you are not. You are not. There's nothing wrong with sex work. Anyway, Scott, let's go on a quick break.
Big fan.
And come back to talk about, all right, Amazon coming for Lena Khan and a listener mail question.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
It's important that we don't try to use an understanding of productivity from the industrial era when people were sitting shoulder to shoulder in a factory setting. When employees are designing their workdays around their most important work, not just reacting to messages and attending meetings, they're more productive.
That's Annie Dean, global head of Team Anywhere at Atlassian. She's leading the mission to empower her 11,000-plus teammates to work from, well, anywhere.
The office isn't dead. It's just not the solution to effective teamwork. Without Team Anywhere, we would probably need about double the amount of office space we have today. And that translates into meaningful annual savings that we can invest in other key company priorities.
Those savings get invested in creating the technology for Atlassian customers like Jira, Loom, and Confluence.
We believe that this is a more human way to work, and that's something that should be celebrated. One of my favorite things is when 3 o'clock rolls around and my two boys come home from school and they both know that they're allowed to interrupt my meeting to give me a kiss. That's something that I never got when I was in the office every single day.
Learn how Atlassian software helps power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, welcome back. Amazon has petitioned for new FTC chair Lena Khan to recuse herself from antitrust investigations into the company. Lena has was sworn in as a chair of the FTC in June. When she was a law student at Yale, she wrote a blockbuster paper that got her all kinds of attention called Amazon's Antitrust Paradox. Now, Amazon has filed a 25-page motion saying, given her long track record of detailed pronouncements about Amazon and her repeated proclamations that Amazon has violated antitrust laws, the reasonable observer would conclude that she no longer can consider the company's antitrust defenses with an open mind. Oh, dear. Honestly, I don't know what to say here. Scott, what do you think? This is like a hard friggin' no, Amazon. How dare you? But go ahead.
This is the same virus that infects Robinhood and all of big tech, and that is they're under the impression that they can totally overrun government, that they can overrun our elected officials, that they can overrun, make any argument, regardless of how moronic, disingenuous, and dangerous. This is an attempt to intimidate people to say, we can slander you and you won't be able to go into government. Because this is similar to saying, all right, if you're in law school and you write a paper on the risk of derivatives, and then you end up as chair of the SEC, that might, obviate, they might diminish your ability to be the SEC chair because you have shown a bias, i.e. domain expertise. So this Amazon's basic argument is, if you show any of the domain expertise that we're supposed to have in government, it diminishes your ability. This is so fucking ridiculous.
It is.
And the fact that they even wrote this and have the stones to say it, or as Stephanie Rule would say, would have the vagina to say this, shows that we have totally decided big tech can overrun government. This is not surprised. The notion that, oh, because you've demonstrated domain expertise, it inhibits or restricts your ability to be a neutral arbiter. That's the point. You're supposed to have domain expertise around these issues. Conflict of interest is if,
by the way, Lena, these are political appointees eventually, you know, three Democrats, two Republicans. In this case, it used to be three Republicans, two Democrats. This is like, of course they have a point of view, Amazon.
Well,
hello.
That's the point. That's how they got there. If she was the largest shareholder in Overstock, that's a conflict of interest. I was trying to think of a competitor to Amazon. There isn't one.
Yeah.
This is domain expertise. Shopify. So now big tech is so emboldened, feels like government is such a weak competitor, and the media is so, such a sycophant to anything they say, that they're going to claim that, oh, now domain expertise conflicts you.
You know, it's interesting because it does go into, you know, when they have hearings for Supreme Court, you know, what's your stance on, they try not to say, but they have, you know, jurisprudence or whatever behind them. So you've seen their cases. And so it's a really interesting, it's just infected everything that you can't have a point of view and then also be changed. Look at the Supreme Court this session. They've done some things, you know, you're like, whoa, I thought that was that. And now it's that. Like, I think it doesn't bring into the idea that people can have their minds changed, for one, and with good arguments. And instead of good arguments, they're saying she has a point of view. That they should spend their time trying to convince her why she's wrong versus trying to impugn her in this way. It's just ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. They never do it to a man, I don't think. I have to say that, you know, and not a, you know.
Oh, I don't think this is.
They have never happened. There's, you know, there's scuttlebutt and whisper campaigns and things like that. But this is a full-on assault, I think, in some ways.
I think you want to both ways here. I think one of the reasons Lena is the FTC chair is because she's a woman. Oh, I'm going to get shit for that.
No. I'm going to push back.
She was a very popular pick for President Biden, who is trying to show the world, I am not some white guy from the 50s and 60s. I'm going to make.
No, he just looked a little further. He just made a little effort to look around a little wider beyond his group.
I think it was a great choice, but I think that I'm not sure she'd be FTC chair at 34 if she were a man. I think this president is committed to having appointed officials that look, feel, and smell like America, which is the right thing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think Amazon would have gone out if a dude was the FTC chair, they would have gone after him as well. I don't think this.
Yeah, we'll see if he goes after
thing.
Tim Wu. We'll see what happens here. But in any case, this
Professor
is,
Wu, they that should guy's spend, a gangster.
They should spend their time convincing her she's wrong and changing her mind, which is what you do. Just do with Supreme Court justices who definitely change their mind, who shift, become more liberal. Mostly they become more liberal when they join the Supreme Court. Interestingly enough, and so it's look at John Roberts. No one thought he would have decisions he's been having. He's just been convinced or persuaded or argued at or debated to, and that's how this should work. They should have a point of view, and she does, and she said a lot. I did a long interview with her. I'm sure they'll use parts of that. I went back and looked at it. I'm like, oh, they'll use this, they'll use that, they'll use this. I'd love to be in the room with the Amazon lawyers that do, like, hey, let's try to, like, you know what I mean? In the old days, they've been like, no, we're not doing that. We're just going to make our case, right? In this case, they pulled the trigger on this one. And I just find this appalling. I'm sorry.
Fine. I don't think it's their lawyers. I think it's their communications team that says, how do we create doubt and distraction? And, well, let's immediately start attacking the idea and the FTC chair, and it'll create a sideshow. And if you say something long enough, and Fox News will run, like, is Lena Khan, you know, should she be recused?
Well, they might not, because
they'll put the question out there.
They don't love Jeff Bezos. This is a hard one for them. Like, they don't have... They don't
True
like
point.
Jeff Bezos more. No, they won't. That's the with tech. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for the right wing to get all hot and bothered about it, except that they're suppressing your speech. And in this case, Jeff Bezos is Trump had a weird obsession. By the way, that was weird. On top of that, I thought that was unfair to Jeff Bezos in that case. But in any case, this is a hard no. And by the way, I will get a call from Amazon. I'll get a call from Amazon after this appears. They are so on it with people who. I was on CNBC once. I think I got off and they called 5 minutes later or something. It was like within a very short time period. And I said something about their headquarters in New York. I don't even remember. I think it was you I was saying something you said. I wasn't even saying what I thought. Anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting that they call you. I always get, so-and-so is going to be in town, the CEO, and they Do you want to join them for an intimate dinner as they outline their vision or technology? Or they'd like to have breakfast with you. And I'm like, I don't want to. The last thing I want to do is hang with these people. And they always come back like, you have an obligation. You're out there saying that. And I'm like, I have an obligation. I'm not a journalist. Kara Swisher has an obligation to be fair and balanced.
I always get that call, the hey girl call. Hey girl. Hey. Hey, I heard you said this. And, you know, we have a different point of view. Like, anyways.
They open with hey girl.
Hey girl. It's like that. It has that tone. Like, hey, girl, let me just tell you something bad about yourself. Anyway, it's...
They always start with, we love your work over here at
Facebook. Oh, yeah,
and
that
like
comes
you.
In.
And I'm like, I bet you just adore it. I bet you just think
they
it's
have
the
a thing.
Bomb.
They must have a thing that goes off and like an alarm that goes off in PR. Anyway,
no,
we'll see.
Actually, some of the PR
people are great. I will just say all of the tech, there's so many good PR people in tech.
I miss jumping at. He and I used to be friends.
Awful
and
people.
There's both.
There's a lot of great ones. And the ones that are great are the ones that are really like, okay, I didn't like that, Kara. And here's
why. No, it'll be nice. We'll get to catch up with all of them in hell, Kara.
Listen, you're for sale for Facebook.
I'm going
for
different
dollars.
Reasons, but
you,
I'll be
you
there.
You would take a million, but I wouldn't take. They put $10 million in front of me. I wouldn't take it. How do you like them apples? How do you like that? Not at all.
Well, there's a reason the dog's at the Beverly Hills Hotel doing edibles and eating a Mr. Chow's. I'm a whore. There's some upside to being a whore.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my God.
All right, listen.
You should see the bougainvillea here. It's beautiful.
Going on. We have lots to get to. Okay, let's pivot to a listener question. Roll tape.
You've got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hey, Kara and Scott, it is Tati. I am coming to you live from New York City. I love the podcast, love the tweets, and love the gratuitous selfies. But I wanted to ask you a question about the labor shortage and the mass exodus from the corporate workforce. We're seeing a lot of people after COVID not going back to their hospitality and manufacturing jobs, but we're also seeing people leave their cushy corporate jobs. Why do you think that is? Where do you think they're going? What do you think companies need to do to keep them there or get them back? And if you were 27 and feeling that itch, what would you do? Thank you so much. I hope you guys have an amazing rest of your week.
Ooh, oh, I like Tati.
Tati.
Tati. Tati's great. Listen, let me just explain to you, Tati. This is what I would say is one of the things that came out this week was that innovation and company creation has peaked for the first time in 10 years during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think people are looking at their lives. They're sitting in their like wherever they are at home. They've been away from the office. It's caused them to think about not just jobs, but how they conduct their jobs, how they conduct their relationships, about their children, about education. Everybody is refiguring everything. And why would you go back to one, shitty jobs, as I said, and I think people who work in retail are really great, but they get treated not as well and they don't get paid as well as they should. Same thing with teachers or in manufacturing. And if you have better choices, you start to make them. So I think this is not, I don't think this is a surprise. Why would you want to do that if you're if you realize life is short, which this pandemic has shown all of us, even if you weren't at risk? Thank you, Scott. Now say something that's not highly offensive to Tati.
I think you summarized it well. COVID is an opportunity for all of us to kind of slow down and rethink and reevaluate our priorities.
Yeah.
And there's two questions here. So if you look at one of the things that's really exciting about this crisis or coming out of this crisis is that unions have been totally ineffective at helping the middle class maintain wage strength. But what has helped, and for the first time, I'm sort of a fan of, I don't want to call it universal basic income, but basic income in the latest bailout package has put enough money in people's wallets that they're like, well, if I don't go to work for $8 an hour, I won't starve. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think we need to create, I think the best union in the world right now is some sort of payment system or transfer system that lets people decide, I don't want to be a frontline worker and put myself in harm's way for $8 an hour. And it's bringing up wages, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's discouraging that CEOs and companies and shareholders and media act so shocked and kind of, I don't know, dismayed that people don't want to work 40 hours a week so they can live in their car. So I think it's time that wages come up dramatically. And then the question around being 27, though, I'm much more boomer kind of dad here, and that is, I think America becomes more like itself every day, and it's capitalist, and your ability to provide opportunities for your children, your ability to get good health care, wrongly or rightly, is based on your economic security here. And there are trade-offs, and I'm not suggesting you shouldn't calibrate those trade-offs, but my advice to people in their 20s is to buck up and work very hard and try and put yourself on a path to some level of economic security.
Yeah.
because it is very important in the U.S.
Yeah, so when not I just talk that, to kids though, who are, though, I think people when they reevaluate mm-hmm. within the like, look, my son who was at NYU this year, freshman year, and he mm-hmm. and he didn't like it. He liked it, New York. He liked it, the classes, but like he made him think about whether he wanted to go to college right now. And he's working at a job. He's an assistant butcher essentially, and loving it, learning about business. He's learning about negotiations with vendors. He's learning about customer service. He loves it. And let me just say, he's a great employee, and he's making pretty good money, you know, because DC has a $15 minimum wage. And I don't know. And he's like, can I maybe take a year off? I'm like, absolutely. Rethink about how you want to conduct your life. And I think that's I think a lot of people are doing that.
I think your son has a safety net, and the safety net drives a Kia Sorento for
some
reason.
No, he will not take my money. He spent. It's interesting. He's like, I don't want to take your.
Yeah, but okay.
All right. Yes, he does technically. Yes.
He's a young white male with wealthy parents.
Agreed.
But I'm saying. He has a different set.
Yes, true.
He has a different. His downside, if you're a lower middle class person of color and you're at NYU, get the fucking degree.
Yeah.
Get the fucking degree.
Yes. Agreed.
And then decide you want to be a butcher or a chef.
Right.
It is. America is a terrible place to not have money.
100%.
And when you're young and you don't have kids and you don't have spouses, that's when you burn the jet fuel. That's when you set yourself, you learn stoicism. Focus, work your ass off and make more money than you spend. Start saving money and put yourself in a position to have a healthy household such that you are not radically stressed in a society that says to you, if you don't make good money, we are going to make your life really, really stressful.
So you would advise, what would you advise if you were not just 27, if you were in your 20s, like early 20s to mid 20s, late 20s, what would you suggest right now? Because this boom in entrepreneurship has been fascinating.
Oh, fantastic. This is, and this goes to my prediction, this is the great age of entrepreneurship. I don't think, on a risk-adjusted basis, as someone who started 9 companies, I don't think you want to be the founder. That is incredibly risky, incredibly stressful. I think joining a small company that has shown some traction, like what I'll call letter D, you know, they've raised their first round of capital. I think on a risk-adjusted basis, that is the sweet spot because a lot of the risk has been starched out, but it's still small enough you can enjoy being part of building something and you can get good equity. But more broadly speaking, your job as a young person is not to find your passion. Don't believe that bullshit. If someone's telling you to follow their passion, it means they're already rich. Your job is to find something you are really good at and then become great at it. And about the moment you're about to give up and think, God, this is so awful and so harsh and so full of bullshit politics, that means you're making progress. Persevere through those things, start building economic security. And once you start getting the economic accoutrements of being great at something, the prestige, the camaraderie, the respect, you will become passionate about whatever that thing is. That is your job in your 20s. Play soccer on the weekends, be a DJ, you know, invest when you're rich in that great cannabis dispensary.
Agreed with that. But let me just say, I think the first part we said is much more important, is that companies have to realize, I've had lots of friends whose reservations have been canceled because they don't have enough staff, that people don't, they've got to make these workplaces better for the people
100%.
Because they've been taking advantage
pay
of them for far
more.
Too long. And Uber's going to cost more. Everything's going to cost more. And that's why the inflation worries. But people are reevaluating. And so people should also reevaluate their business plans in terms of how they're going to misuse people's sweat equity, essentially.
Yeah, but this is a wonderful thing. We have said, I think the Biden administration deserves credit for this most recent bailout, which is more than 50% is going to individuals, whereas the previous CARES package, where more than 50% was going to corporations and organizations. And finally, there's an effective union in America, and it's called the U.S. government, and it said that it is better, we're going to give people enough money so they don't starve. And it's going to force, but you summarize this perfectly. If you're a cool little restaurant, right, doing a great job offering consumers, you know, great tapas, well, good for you. But if the only way that business can run is by finding people who need flexible work, and because they have no other options, they will take $7-$8 an hour, then that taperia should go away. That's fine. And there's certain businesses that just shouldn't be around if they need to be driven on software that circumvents minimum wage laws. Lyft and Uber should be much smaller businesses. Millennials don't need to take SUVs to the airport. They don't, you know, we need to reinvest in public infrastructure. So I think this is wonderful what's going on and bringing up finally the wages of lower income workers. And it was the government that finally stepped in and said, you know what, we're the union. Unions are totally ineffective and have been ineffective and have been a fantastic foe for corporate America because they're so fucking weak and stupid and poorly managed and corrupt. Hello, unions. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Finally, okay. Finally, wages are rising. Finally, the economy is starting to recognize
what
that if you're going to be the wealthiest nation in the world, you got to start acting like
what it. I find interesting is Republicans always say people don't want to work and they'd rather just take the handout. You know what? They're rich people do this, reevaluate their life, where people who have degrees reevaluate. I'm going to make a pivot. Everybody gets, you know, great idea, good idea. Find, you know, do something fresh and new and entrepreneurial. When other people say this is not what we're being paid is shitty and we want better terms, they call them lazy, like, oh, and we're not going to work because we're getting money over here. The ability to make choices is the sign of a real society on all levels. The ability
it's very American, yeah, too. Our one of our core competences in America is we leave,
yeah,
and that is we're not afraid to leave a country and come for something better. My dad's core competence is leaving. Whenever he was in a company or a state where things weren't going well for him, yeah, he packed his bags and he moved to Phoenix,
yeah,
you know, he. He just said, I'm out. And Americans, if you look at European or even other cultures like in Japan, they tend to stay with the same employer. They tend to stay in the same geography. Yeah. In America, the fluidity of capital, your ability to allocate capital to where it'll be most productive, is an unbelievable component of an innovative society. And our human capital here is not afraid to get on a plane or in a car and just drive west.
This is true. Although you know, I don't think we take as good care as we can of the things like healthcare and stuff. Like we don't, we really leave them no, like if you mess up or you get injured.
We're slowing down the fluidity of human capital because people can't leave because of
the lack of portability of healthcare. No, I get that. That's what I'm saying. We should protect them more to be able to use this thing. It's an interesting talent. I have a similar talent. I go. In fact, recently I was working and something was off.
You get in your career. Kia, you don't look back.
I don't look back. Someone was like saying that do this, and I literally wrote back a one word answer to a negotiator. I went no. I just was like no. I didn't know what to do. I was like no, thanks.
Occasionally, like after a long weekend with my kids, I sometimes just want to get in my car and drive.
I said that to Amanda. I was like, I would like to be in Hawaii in a shack. I was like, we were getting some oysters at this really wonderful oyster bar called the Matunik Oyster Bar here. And there was a little house across the way. And this guy was getting his little rowboat in his little house. And I'm like, I would like to be that person.
Having kids is hugely overrated on a day-to-day basis. Enough, some more advice to 27-year-olds.
It is
condoms.
Not. No, wrong.
Condoms.
Wrong. Taddy, don't listen
don't
to this
asshole.
Do
not have kids at a young age. Do not
have kids
at a young age.
They're great. They're great. We're going to
when you're older.
No.
When you're older and you can lubricate it with a lot of help.
No. No, no, this is not true.
Yeah.
I don't have help much of the time. Anyway, I do have a lovely
Daddy
life.
Daddy needs to sleep in.
All right, okay.
Daddy needs to sleep in. Have someone you can hand them to. You want to love your kids and love yourself?
You've gotten canceled 12 times during the show, and I'd like to limit it to 12, if you don't mind. We're going to go through. We have one more
quick Facebook
break.
Is going to call me.
All right, okay, yeah, they're not. Okay, Scott, one more quick break. We'll be back for predictions, and my prediction is they're not going to call you.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hey, Scott, that. We're going to go through a lot of predictions next week, including the fact that you're not going to be chair of the FTC, which I'll tell you more about in a minute. But give us one for this week, a very short one, because we've got a very important close this week.
Record year for new business startups. It, just to every point we've been talking about, people are reevaluating their lives. There's more venture capital available than ever. When people come out of a crisis, an organization, they're much more open to doing things differently. We have between commercial office space, healthcare, education, you have $5 or $6 trillion being thrown up in the air, and it's going to land in different places. This is really exciting. This is a new era of entrepreneurship. We're going to see new business formation go back to where it was in the Carter administration. It has been in a huge slump where only people of a certain gender, ethnicity, certification could start companies or really successful companies. Venture capital is recognizing they want to evaluate CEOs based on their skills and their grit, not necessarily, there was sort of a profile. Mm-hmm. Drop out of Harvard, go to work for a hedge fund, then you can raise money. And now they're saying, well, it's more than that. So I think this is very exciting. This is a great, one of the wonderful things about America and the reason we always seem to get through things, we're like that Terminator guy that can remorph when an arm gets cut off. We adapt faster to economic changes than any country in the world. This is a great era of entrepreneurship. We're going to see more new businesses started in the second half of 2021 in any 6 month period in the last 30 or 40
years.
Well,
we are going to hold you to that, and I'll explain that later. But before we go, today is Rebecca's last day producing Pivot. We love Rebecca. Rebecca, come on and tell us where you're going, because this is quite a doozy.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
It's bittersweet, but I'm going to be the head of audio for Archwell, overseeing the creative partnership between the Duke and Duchess of Sussex and Spotify.
So, Meghan and Harry, you want to just say
more than that? Don't be. Oh, aren't you a little?
Yeah.
Oh, you're so coy. Come on, don't be so coy.
This is Meghan and Harry. What?
I will never be royal.
Like, this is so cool. Can we meet them? That's the first time. Can they come on our show?
Talk about the mother of all upgrades. Harris Swisher and Scott Galloway to Meghan and Harry. Yeah, that must have been a tough decision whether to leave or not. That took her all of a quarter of a second. I'm in. Yes, we haven't made the offer yet. I'm in.
They're doing it with Spotify. Fascinating. Oh, Spotify and Netflix and all those are hiring all the fancy people like the Obamas, et cetera. So what are they doing?
We're still working on it. I'm going to start in August and I'm going to be moving to LA. Mm-hmm. New York girl is going to LA.
Wow.
And, I don't really have anything specific to share.
Oh, okay. Oh, look,
and I think I should take this time to talk about how handsome Scott is.
No, but wait.
I don't think we spend nearly enough time talking about how handsome Scott is.
All right. Rebecca, what would you like?
I can't believe someone in our universe is going to work for Meghan and Harry. How did that happen?
I don't know. We don't
how
know.
Did that
but it
happen?
Did happen, and we feel great about it. Now, Rebecca, let's give Rebecca the stage for 14 seconds, essentially.
Well done.
I know you're going to call me sappy, but I really, really do want to go on a mini rant about just like watching the two of you as leaders over the past couple of years, because like I started this show and it was like just the two of you. And so Kara, you are just like an absolute emblem of breaking the glass ceiling for all of us. And like, I want to thank you for personally believing in me, because that meant so much in my life. And like all women in media are just following in your footsteps.
Oh, thank you.
And we all owe you a debt of gratitude. And your place in the world has given me permission to be my fullest, most ambitious self in a world that like consistently asks me to shrink.
Oh, excellent.
To which I say,
hell
no.
Don't shrink.
Scott, what I want to say to you is I had no financial education. I was like a waitress stuffing dollar bills into my pockets until pretty recently. And you have given me the tools to really understand how money works in my personal life. And then also how money works like on a macro level and how it transfers power and really what it means. And with that knowledge, it's made me better at understanding sort of like what our responsibility is to one another and to the government. And I just... by watching you guys do these things that you just do because you're just you, I've gained so much that maybe you couldn't know on a day-to-day basis. And then one final thing, which is that I listen to all the listener mail questions. I really do, genuinely, all the listeners. And they come from New Zealand. They come from Germany. They come from Hawaii. They come from all over the world. And we only get to pick one.